This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Money coming out. Young folks getting paid around the world of sports. I never thought I'd see a day where I looked up and saw a Major League Baseball star sign a multi-million dollar deal and go, oh yeah, that's not quite NFL quarterback money, but it'll do. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, Mike Golic Jr. with you. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. How wild is that, by the way? The Patrick Mahomes deal still. Now, I understand baseball's fully guaranteed as Mookie Betts signs a what will come to in total with the current year that he is on, a 13-year, $392 million deal, a $365 million extension.
First off, the numbers aren't that, and I will get to that in a moment because I am a numbers guy.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Yeah, but you're right, because in every NBA free agency, when we get to that, that's when we tell NFL players, turn your Twitter off. Okay, because they see the NBA deals going out and they get more mad and more mad and mad and mad and saying, why can't we get this type of money? Now, one of their guys got this type of money, and I don't know when the guy will get that type of money again. We will see, but Mahomes got that type of money. Now, not fully guaranteed, but in a good way to get a lot of it guaranteed that is equal to some of those top guys in baseball. So never did I think we'd hear the day, a baseball player signed a monster deal, but it wasn't an NFL quarterback deal.
I should have known better coming in this morning that objects in the mirror are not as close as they appear with this deal, and that you would have deep dove on this somehow. I'm very interested to get to that here. Okay. But I guess just in general, the response to this for anyone, and this is the same with Patrick Mahomes, by the way, is the idea of paying a player this sum of money amidst a global pandemic. But we know with Mookie Betts, it was a bit more complicated than what was going on with Pat, who they had under control for a little while. The talk going into this with Mookie was, well, you brought him over here on a one-year, $27 million deal, and there was the potential for this season to be at best shortened and at worst not happen at all.
Well, that's exactly right. And he leaves Boston, where in Boston he said he wanted to test free agency. And basically Boston was like, well, we're not going to take that chance. And they were probably like, we'd have to pay him anyway. But Mookie wanted to kind of hit the open market. Now you obviously get paid this amount. You don't have to worry about hitting the open market. I do hear a lot of people, you know, the open was great with Freddie Fitzsimmons about, you know, talking about the owners crying poor. Listen, we did have some owners doing that, but we certainly didn't hear about that from the Dodgers. This, to me, is nothing different than we've seen. There are some baseball teams that can do this deal and a lot that can't do this deal or won't do this deal. Nothing has changed there. We're in a global pandemic. I get it. Mookie Betts is not making $27 million this year, as part of the numbers I'm going to get to right now of what he's making. He certainly is making a lot of money, and baseball is not making the money they're going to have, but the thought is they're going to get back eventually to playing baseball and making money the way they've made money. So this is a long-term play, obviously, at 13 years. So to me, it's not as shocking. We all knew. Listen, anytime an owner cried poor, we laughed at him anyway. So why is this any different? Why is this any different? We didn't believe him when they cried poor before. So why should we be shocked that this kind of deal is done?
Exactly. It is just, it's proof and everything else for them that flew in the face of what they tried to tell us and all this. And it should be a sign, right? Like, all right, baseball and a team like the Dodgers are still so willing to, in this situation, invest in their future in something that it shows you they believe there's going to be one.
Right.
That on the other side of this, they believe things are going to normalize, going to steady, and all of a sudden you're going to find yourself with a situation where, oh, we want to keep a 27-year-old superstar around in all this, a guy who's got the tools to be someone that we eventually see in Cooperstown.
So, and Mookie Betts and this kind of money, what kind of player is he? Well, this is the one stat everybody looks at. On a per-game basis, he's the seventh most valuable position player in baseball history with a minimum of 500 games based on the WAR stat. Wins against replacement per 162 games. Babe Ruth is number one at 10.5 games. Mike Trout is number two, and there's news on him today, at just under 10 games. Then you go to Roger Hornsby, Barry Bonds, Ted Williams, Lou Gehrig, and then Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is actually tied with Lou Gehrig at 8.5 games, wins above replacement. So that's where he is considered in that stat in baseball history. So he gets the monster deal that isn't really the numbers we're looking at.
Yeah. Well, all right. So here it is, because this comes on the eve of baseball getting ready to start up again.
Starting today.
We have gotten to opening day. It seemed like it was a pipe dream at best a couple of months ago in a lot of this, but we're going to get what we were looking for tonight. Gerrit Cole and Max Scherzer squaring off at 7 Eastern as the Yankees and Nats play. Johnny Cueto and Clayton Kershaw in the late game as the Giants and Dodgers are going to square off, both on ESPN. But we know, different season, different structure pay-wise, and that's where this comes in.
Yeah, so again, the one real number is the 12-year, $365 million extension, okay? But he's not making $392 total, because that's basing it off the $27 million this year, of which he's not getting. They're playing 37% of their games, of the games this year. So instead of the $27 million, he is making $9.9 million this year. So let's just say, make it easy, say 10 mil. So he's making $10 million this year, not $27 million, which brings it to a 13-year, $375 million deal. So to make it even more fun, by per what he gets per day, forget not per game, but starting today, season start today.
Per human day.
Per human day, for the next 13 years, he will make just above $79,000 per day.
God,
per day.
I hate that.
Again, in season, off season, anytime, every single day for the next 13 years. I like it in these terms more than the total. Every single day for the next 13 years, he will make little over $79,000 a day.
Man, whether he's sitting around watching a Snoop Dogg DMX versus battle or actually going to the park,
doesn't
to play
matter how
baseball.
Many games he plays. You know, the 162, 150, 140, doesn't matter.
Well, and that
off
is,
days, off season, doesn't matter.
And that is the part about baseball that's always like, this is ironclad. Like,
this is
his lottery ticket. We know with Patrick Mahomes, during this deal, they're probably going to restructure all this.
Exactly.
He's probably going to sign a different
deal,
an extension to manipulate the money and all that. And he's still going to see a lot of money, but we know it's going to change. This one, we know, as you look at the terms right here, just like it happened with, I mean, got it going all the way back to A-Rod and one of the first monster market resetters we've ever seen.
Right.
To Giancarlo Stanton on the Yankees. Because, man, like, and we hear all this stuff, too, about, you know, did you want to test free agency? Did you want to do this, that, and the other? And you look at it, and it's like, what part of testing would you want when you could cash a winning lottery ticket? And for everything we talk about with the ownership side and the player side, I'm sure you look at this and you see the uncertainty around the pandemic and you are, the next couple of years at the very least are going to be an interesting landscape surrounding Major League Baseball that maybe I don't really want to play with all that much. When I can cash a winning lottery ticket as a 27-year-old on a perennial contender in Los Angeles.
Yes. I mean,
where else would you like to be?
Check, check, check. I mean, for all of this. So, again, not surprising to me, because we never believe baseball owners when they cry poor anyway. So, this all, we're going to have our fun today on it, and I get it. I understand that. But it's not surprising at all. And congrats to Mookie Betts, man. Grab it when you can. I mean, that's just awesome.
And I understand that, like, a lot of people will point out, like, there's a lot of people struggling, and we acknowledge that going on right now.
Understood.
The pandemic. But in the realm of sports, it is always going to make my heart full to see young people get
absolutely
paid life-changing sums of money.
Absolutely right. The guy's a hell of a player. 6 years in Boston. He's, what I think, career. He's just a little over 300 batting average. But he's one hell of a player. We all know that. And the great players get big-time contracts. And I know it just seems odd in the timing of this contract. I get it. But business keeps on going. And this business just got completed. Oh, by the way, I think he gets $65 million to sign.
Decent start to kick the party off on there. As Dad said, on a per-game basis, the seventh most valuable position player in Major League history. That 8.5 wins above replacement tied with Lou Gehrig and just behind Ted Williams. Player resumes brought to you by Indeed. Find the high-impact hire your business needs at Indeed.com/high-impact. Coming up next, we got another NFL owner in the news for all the wrong reasons, and we go to our source for all things on that subject next.
Jets owner Woody Johnson was subject to a State Department investigation following allegations he made sexist and racist comments. Johnson called the claims false.
If you're a Jets player and you want to be on the right side of racial and sexist issues, this is your owner. There is no running from this.
Woody Johnson has an impressive resume of being terrible at that job. And when confronted with these allegations, he didn't deny them.
Whew. A lot to unpack with New York. The Jets thought that they had things to worry about with just the football team. The problems appear to be far bigger than that at the moment. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. with you guys. And you heard it there in the open. Jets owner Woody Johnson under investigation by a State Department watchdog following allegations that he made racist and sexist comments while serving as the ambassador to the United Kingdom and sought to have the Open Championship played at a resort owned by the president, Donald Trump. A lot to unpack there as we get ready to go. And so to help us do so, we're joined now by Mike Tannenbaum, our ESPN NFL front office insider. Mike, obviously, thanks for joining us this morning. You spent a lot of time working with the Jets. You weren't hired by Woody Johnson, but worked in the building there. So what was your initial reaction when hearing these allegations?
Yeah, good to be with you guys. Obviously, I was really surprised and disappointed if it's true. Very serious allegations. But I could just tell you guys firsthand on years and years of working for Woody Johnson, the Johnson family, I never experienced any of those allegations that, again, are very serious. But based on my experience, I never saw any of that.
Knowing the climate we are in today, Mike, with people having enough with this kind of thing, and we're seeing it all over the country, is would you expect, or I guess the thought process of players pushing back on this somehow, some way? I mean, they're under contract. They got, this is the team they're going to play for and get paid by. But in this day and age, would you expect any players to maybe push back on this?
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. I think we saw that to a certain extent yesterday with Jamal Adams. And again, these are very serious allegations that I'm sure the league will look at thoroughly and let the process take its course. But I'm sure the players will want to know, what happened and if it's true. But again, we have to understand that these are only allegations at this point, but I expect more players besides Jamal Adams to, closely monitor the situation. And, if Woody Johnson made those comments, to be held accountable. But again, like we context here is important. He had a long track record of owning and running a team in the biggest city in the world. So to me, I think sometimes we have to let the facts play out and then see what happens. So I do think, players will, as you said, there's certainly a heightened sense of, social injustice in our country now. And I think they're going to closely monitor what's going on.
ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum with us here on Golic and Wingo. Mike, just to give people a sense of how present Woody Johnson was in that building there. We know different teams, different owners, and different levels of involvement, whether it's the day-to-day operations or just overall in the Jets organization. What was his presence like in the building when you were there, and what do you believe it to be now?
Yeah, Mike, when I was there, I was very fortunate to be the general manager under him, and he was there at least 2 to 3 days a week. And as you guys know, most NFL teams will be on the field to some extent on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. And he was at most of those practices, certainly not all of them, but he had a very significant presence. It was very important to him. And obviously now, because he is the ambassador to England, he cannot have anything to deal with the team from a day-to-day basis. So, candidly, I don't know how much he's even in the country. So, but when I was there, he was around a tremendous amount.
And again, the NFL has said they're aware of this, and any media inquiries that they're forwarding off to the State Department. And as you said, we have to wait for this investigation to see what happens. But again, I'll go from the player's aspect and the now and the reality of this. Jamal Adams had wanted out, had requested a trade. Now, that doesn't mean you get a trade. But so in your position as general manager, if now Jamal Adams or his agent now call you and say, listen, I don't like what I'm hearing out of my owner. I wanted to be out of here. Now I really want to be out. Does this at all help his case and force you as a general manager to really try and get him to another team? Or does this not matter at all?
Yeah, Mike, obviously it's I would expect that phone call and say context is everything. That right now these are only allegations. With that said, very serious allegations, and there needs to be a thorough investigation to see what happens here, and we will deal with it at the proper time and place. And the league has shown a great track record of holding people accountable for their actions, if true. Until then, you're under contract, and we fully expect you to honor the contract. So there's a time and a place. And right now, you know, you feel like you want to be traded, and that's not something that we're going to entertain. So if and when, you know, new facts come out, we'll deal with them at the appropriate time.
And so that's on the micro level with Jamal Adams right. and all of this. Now, mm-hmm. where do you see this going for the organization? They've come out with a statement certainly on this, and Dad just read what the NFL's response to this has been. But how closely is this monitored, especially as teams are getting ready to ramp back up for training camp in the NFL season to get started?
Yeah, Mike, that's a great point, which is, you know, it's really obviously on so many levels the last thing you want to be dealing with, you know, especially when it comes, you know, starting at the top this time of year where obviously you just want to be focused on getting as many healthy players on the field as possible in this really unusual time. I think this is where you test the leadership of Joe Douglas and Adam Gase, which is, again, you know, this is going to be something that, as that statement said, the State Department has to look into. Probably the NFL is going to start an investigation at some point. So it's really out of their hands, and it's going to be up to them to keep their players focused on the field. And, you know, the other dynamic here that I think bears mentioning is Chris Johnson is currently the acting owner of the team. And I think, you know, it's also up to him to step up, you know, from a leadership role and say, hey, you know, what my brother may have, you know, said will be handled. But, you know, the here and the now is, you know, I'm running this team. And, you know, I got to know Chris as well, not nearly as well as Woody, but a wonderful person, someone that I know cares deeply about the Jets, the NFL. He's taken his responsibilities really seriously. So, you know, for him, you know, he is the acting owner, and he can also come out from a position of leadership to say that, you know, I'm running the 2020 Jets, and we're focused on the field, and let, you know, this other situation play out, you know, somewhat independently.
It's going to have to play out. I'm sure we'll be right now, the Jets, just with the statement, I'm sure we'll have to hear more from them as this investigation goes on. Mike, we appreciate you jumping on for a few minutes, and very soon we'll be talking actual football going out on the field yep. as players and teams are, it looks anyway, at least it seems, 5 days away from reporting to training camp, if in fact July 28th is still the day. We look forward to chatting with you then.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Interesting situation. I mean, you know, obviously we just got all this last night, so a lot to digest in this.
Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Indeed. If finding a high-impact hire is a serious goal for your business, use Indeed. Their flexible payment options mean better bang for your buck with no long-term contracts. They'll even give you a $75 credit for your first sponsored job post at Indeed.com/high-impact. Terms and conditions apply. Much more on those allegations against Jets owner Woody Johnson and the one player who has spoken out so far. We'll get to that next. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
Jeff Passan is going to join us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Jeff, I know you're a Wu-Tang guy. Cash rules everything around Mookie Betts right now. This seemed like a no-brainer, despite the current backdrop of the coronavirus and all the wailing of gnashing of teeth that we heard from the ownership in Major League Baseball, huh?
That's kind of the incredible part of this whole thing, right? It's not, you know, we're kind of used to these enormous numbers with athletes, whether it's Mike Trout getting $426 million, Patrick Mahomes. By the way, what did Patrick Mahomes actually end up at? Was it 450? Oh, was it 475? Was it 500,
$475, I believe, was the total value.
It could be over 500, but those deals, Jeff, are so different than baseball. That's going to be restructured right. in a number of years. Those numbers are going to change. He's going to make a lot, no doubt about it, but that's always the one thing we've known about baseball. The end number is the end number for these guys.
Yeah, Mookie Betts, when it's all said and done, actually, no, because this year's salary is prorated, so he's not going to get the full $392, but he's going to get pretty close to $392 million when it's all said and done. And the fact that he is going to get that much money in the pandemic, when, as you guys know, baseball owners spent a lot of time talking this offseason about, talking after play was suspended about how much money that they're going to be losing. I believe that it was Tom Ricketts, the owner of the Chicago Cubs, who said the losses are going to be biblical. Mookie Betts is like in biblical times right now getting fed grapes by people. And he has You know, he is the person who is ending up the best, maybe out of everyone in all of this. And it's what made it so shocking that even with the pandemic still raging on, the Dodgers believed that signing Mookie Betts to this mega deal was the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the bottom line is they may be losing some money this year, but we know they have money. So, and nothing has changed. The rich teams are able to pay these, and the other teams won't pay this. And this, it's just the timing of everything. I get it, but I don't think anything has really changed on the facts of baseball and paying these contracts. Is there still going to be an issue? Because we were talking about the big-time players, Jeff, are always going to get the big-time money. Is it the, remember the next tier, we had so many, more than a few free agents really not signing with anybody for a long time. They weren't these big of deals, but they just weren't signing. Is that something that's going to change, or is it always just going to be the rich are going to get theirs and we're not sure about everybody else?
Baseball is not trickle-down economics. You know, if Mookie Betts goes and gets a particular amount, that doesn't mean that people beneath him are going to be getting more as well. And I think the effect that this has, it'll have some effect on, like, Francisco Lindor, for example. You know, there was the thought that with Francisco Lindor, that with Javi Baez, that with some of the guys in upcoming free agent classes who were primed to get a lot of money, that the pandemic was really going to affect them. I'm not quite as convinced of that now after seeing what happened yesterday, but I am still extremely convinced that the average 30-year-old middle reliever is going to have a really hard time finding work starting next year.
Jeff Passan with us, our senior ESPN MLB insider. Tune in tonight as opening action with Aaron Judge and the Yankees visiting the defending champion Nats, presented by Geico. Coverage begins at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and at 7 p.m. on ESPN. And we will certainly get to the storylines surrounding opening night. But, Jeff, first we got to figure out what the Blue Jays are going to be doing here. They get the Heisman from the state of Pennsylvania on this front and trying to play their games at PNC. So what is the most likely option for them looking like as we sit here today?
You know, I think that if in the end, if the Baltimore Orioles are willing to host them, and if the state of Maryland is willing to allow them in and to allow, you know, 30 more games into the state, that's the most desirable spot. What's the likeliest? I think it depends. I mean, if you're the Blue Jays players, would you rather, because you want to play in a big league ballpark, spend more of your games, if perhaps all of your games, on the road and use those as your quote-unquote home games? Or would you rather go to, like, AAA Buffalo? And, you know, right now Buffalo doesn't have approval from Major League Baseball. So this concept of being a road warrior is very much alive at this point. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think it might actually be the odds-on favorite at this point for what the Blue Jays are going to do.
I could only speak as a former athlete in this and those scenarios, is I think I would want one spot to call temporary home for a while, albeit, you know, a AAA ballpark as opposed to a big league ballpark. A lot of things are different this year. You know, that's just the way it is. So we'll wait and see how that plays out. Bottom line, though, we start tonight. And the difference is, normally the start of a baseball season is like the start of a marathon. Everybody kind of standing there and kind of slowly getting out of the starting blocks, where this is going to be like the 100-yard dash. Everybody's in those blocks coming out like a sprint. So what's your expectation early on from the start of the season?
I have a hard time trying to figure out what this is going to be like exactly, just because I've never seen anything like it before. You know, in baseball, we're used to the idea of the marathon, and the fact that it's going to be a sprint is almost confusing to me, just because I don't know how it's going to feel. I don't know what that's going to look like. And I think baseball really can benefit from it. And if they wind up expanding the playoffs after all, and not only do you have this shootout over 60 games, but that 16 of the teams are going to make the playoffs, it's going to make things even more interesting in the end.
Jeff, is that a good sign or a bad sign for Major League Baseball and the Players Association that they haven't yet figured out the playoff format going into this season?
It's completely ridiculous, but it's baseball. Like, what would baseball be if it did things right or normally? It's got to have, like, some level of screw-up in it, right? Everything can't fire on all cylinders for it to be baseball. Though, I will say this. I feel like Max Scherzer versus Gerrit Cole in the first game of the season is kind of firing on all cylinders. Like, tonight's going to be, as long as the weather holds up, I think tonight's going to be a very cool night.
I would complain. Everybody looking forward to this.
Now that you said the weather thing, though, I'm concerned now.
Yeah.
I've been sitting here watching this thing for like 24 hours. We said like there was a humongous storm here yesterday. I'm sorry if there's rain tonight. It's not my fault because I set it on Golden Wingo. Come on, don't.
I'm not
don't
blaming you, Jeff. Thing. I'm blaming 2020. I'm very worried about this year's hold on my happiness. I want to be clear. You are completely absolved in blaming Jeff.
I'll tell you what. I think we dare 2020. I'm tired of 2020. I'm tired of it bullying us around. I'm tired of sitting here.
Yes.
I mean, listen. It's all true, but I still want to like. I want to be like the guy who tries to stand up and then is just smited by 2020. Because you know it's going to happen. You know, Jeff, 2020 does not suffer fools gladly.
Jeff, I only have six more shows on ESPN Radio, so I'm flat out blaming you if there's no game tonight.
you're like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon, man. You just want to avoid everything you possibly can.
Exactly right. Shielding it away. I got retirement coming up.
Jeff Passan, our ESPN MLB insider. Jeff, we appreciate you joining us. Dad's going to blame you. I'm not. Either way, we will look up point and dare 2020 together on this one. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it, Mike. Take care.
Thanks, Jeff. See ya.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day. What a show. What a time.
One, two, three, four.
To be joined now by our very own Lisa Salters, ESPN reporter Lisa Salters, inside of the NBA bubble here. Lisa, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing pretty well, Lisa. It's starting to finally get underway in the NBA bubble. We had the scrimmages, the inter-squad scrimmages starting up yesterday. So I'm curious, what did it look and feel like as the NBA got into its first foray of teams playing against other opponents?
I got to tell you, it was so great just to see the guys out on the floor again, playing, running up and down, seeing the officials, hearing the buzzer. All of that. But it was a little weird because, as you know, the NBA is still kind of tweaking how they want to do the audio inside the venues. They're not sure what they want to do about crowd noise things like that. And so because this is just a scrimmage, not just a scrimmage, but because this was a scrimmage, what we saw yesterday is not going to be what we see, say, when regular season games resume on the 30th. So it was just quiet. There was really nothing inside the venue last night. Just the ref's whistle, the buzzer, the announcer, saying, foul on, number whatever, and giving the guy's name. So it was kind of eerily quiet. As a member of the media, you're sitting there with 10 other people watching the game, and it's just silent. And you're thinking, what if I say, oh, that was a terrible call, ref? that would, it would have echoed throughout the entire arena. So that was just weird how usually sometimes you can't hear yourself think when you're watching a game at a venue. Now it was just so quiet because they haven't really figured out what they want to do about the fact that there are no fans there.
And also, it's in a different environment, and forgetting the no fans, but, whenever we get to the NCAA tournament and they start to be held in, like, these bigger, roofed stadiums where now there's more crowds there and the depth perception for the players and such. So this is a new area for the players to play on. The court sizes are the same and all that. I get it. But around it is different. Any talk about how that will affect the games or things maybe coaches or players maybe want to see differently?
Well, there's really not much they can do about it. The fact that there is a lot of area, much more room around the court than there usually is, because there are no stands for fans. So they've got the seating, a lot of seating, up to 62 seats courtside for players from, you know, opposing, you know, teams who aren't playing, guys who are just kind of hanging out in the bubble, who think like, oh, you know, I'm going to go watch this team play. We play them in a couple of days, but I'm going to go watch them. So that's kind of neat, because that's something that you don't really see in the NBA. Occasionally, you might have an NBA player checking out a game from another NBA game, but usually after that guy has been eliminated from the playoffs, or he's watching his brother play on another team. That's something that you see like in the NCAA tournament, right, where entire teams will come sit and watch a game for, you know, that their next opponent is playing. So now here in the bubble, because, I mean, there isn't a whole lot for guys to do here. If guys want to come watch a game, there are up to 62 seats that they can just come watch a game. And I think that's kind of neat as well. There's extra room for cameras. I know our guys are always fighting for spots on the floor for the cameras to get in. And now there's plenty of room around the court for all these extra cameras. So I think that's going to be kind of cool as well. All these extra angles. Yeah.
Well, I can say, I think it is. It's equal parts entertainment and scouting and all this. When I saw Boban working at the Pac-Man machine last night, looking a little bit oversized. So I feel like this space might be more to his liking in a lot of this, as Lisa Salters is with us from inside the NBA bubble. And speaking of the players, we got a great star back. Russell Westbrook has cleared the protocol there. He got back through and got back on the court. So what was the feedback like around him in his first practice coming off of his bout with COVID-19?
Well, you know, just I was not at that press conference, but, or did not watch that Zoom conference. I went to the scrimmage yesterday. But from what I was reading from Mike D'Antoni's remarks is that, you know, they've got to ease him in a little bit. I mean, you're just getting here to Orlando. He had to deal with, you know, being quarantined back wherever he lives, as he, you know, dealt with having COVID-19. You get here to Orlando, you have to quarantine in your room for a certain amount of time. So he's just getting back out onto the floor with his guys. That's going to take some time. But look at Russell Westbrook. I mean, does he look like a guy who's ever out of shape? No. So I think that the Rockets are confident that when it comes time to play meaningful games, that Russ will be in good shape and ready to go.
So he is back. Another team waiting for their star to come back is New Orleans to try and get into that fray for the eighth spot in the West. Zion Williamson still out, being tested every day. And I know New Orleans very tight-lipped about this, Lisa, so I'm not sure if there's any more information out there about the possibility of when he may be coming back.
There really isn't. I saw Alvin Gentry yesterday after their practice. And I just kind of said the same thing. When are you going to get your guy back? And he's, you know, don't know. This is a personal matter. He'll be back when he gets back. But like Alvin has said before, the Pelicans are used to playing without Zion. They mm-hmm. did it for most of the season. But this is a little bit different. Like, they had just started to get on a run. They were definitely, you know, had their eyes set on the playoffs. That's still very much within their grasp. But I no doubt that they want to have their guy back out here as quickly as possible, because they want him to be in tip-top shape. They want him to be in the right frame of mind, you know, mentally and physically. But I think they expect to have him back, and I think they expect to have him back and ready to play when the regular season restarts.
Lisa Salter's with us here. Lisa, I got to ask too, we talked to Mark Spears last week. Is it true you just waxed him playing Madden?
Oh, absolutely, guys. I'm surprised. I was proud of him for putting that out there, because I wouldn't have put him on blast like that. But it was so much fun. I mean, we were just like little kids, just, you know, looking for anything to do. And then when we realized, okay, you brought your PlayStation, I brought mine too. Like, let's play. It took us over an hour to try to figure out how to do it and how to get connected online, but it was worth it. I just totally waxed him. I mean, and he blamed it on Drew Brees. And I'm like, Drew Brees, come on. Like, the guys were just talking, Drew Brees is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. But Patrick Mahomes, oh, he let him have it. So, but it was a lot of fun. I am not rushing to play him again because I'm a very poor loser. So if I were to lose, I'd be just so mad that, you know, so I'm just going to go with this one victory, and I'm just going to ride this out through the rest of the bubble.
Oh, okay, because he said he was going for a rematch. So if he does, are you going to duck the rematch?
Well, I guess if he comes at me and he calls me out publicly, then I'm going to have to play him again. But, you know, right now I'm not the one who's like saying, hey, let's play again.
True. Good point. It's not on you. The ball is not in your court. You're exactly right.
Exactly. Well, Lisa, if push comes to shove, we have all the confidence in the world that you and Patrick Mahomes are going to go back out there and do the damn thing yet again. We appreciate the time this morning, Lisa. Stay safe.
Thank you, guys.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Checking in right now with Notre Dame head football coach Brian Kelly. Coach, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. It's great to talk to what I would consider the only show to talk about college football is the Golic Times 2 show.
Oh, we like that a lot.
Exactly. Yes. We've got the monopoly on it right here around here, which is a nice place to be, Coach. And I guess just checking in for you right now, Jack Swarbrick, the athletic director at Notre Dame, obviously made a lot of waves earlier in this week talking about his desire to see the start time of the season move back. I'm sure you guys have talked at length about this. So what have the conversations been like from your end about the timeline for the start of the season?
Well, I think, you know, moving it back just meant to create some space in the month of September for us. And as you know, we were scheduled to go early in Ireland in August. And so it just made sense that, you know, from our standpoint, given the current, you know, situation in the country, creating some space in the month of September, you know, just gives us an opportunity for, you know, everything to begin to take a better stance as it relates to getting a handle on, you know, your protocols and procedures, get a peek and a glimpse at what's going on out there in terms of what other people are doing. You saw yesterday the NFL is going to require all fans to wear masks. Can we take a little bit of that from maybe what we're going to do at Notre Dame for fans? You know, so all of it is really about, you know, buying us a little bit more time to get a sense for what the landscape looks like out there in our country. We're going to play football. And I say that with the confidence based upon how well and how determined and disciplined our players are. They want to play, and they have shown over the last month the kind of commitment, the attention to detail, the discipline to play in a very difficult situation. There's a pandemic going on, and we all know that, and you have to be safe, you have to be careful, but our guys have handled it tremendously, and I'm so proud of them, and they are so committed. They want to play this game of football, and we're going to provide them every opportunity to do so.
And I want to get into that because that is such an important part. But as far as pushing the season, it would seem to make sense because it doesn't seem like anybody is going to play a full season. Notre Dame already had Stanford and USC and Wisconsin pulled because of the Pac-12. And the Big Ten have said they're only doing conference games. So pushing it seems like the right thing to do. But, you know, Notre Dame, as far as their testing, had very few positive tests. And a lot of that, you mentioned it, the protocols are one thing. But just like in baseball, because they're going to travel, in the NFL, they're going to travel, in college, they're going to travel, you have to have buy-in from the players. So can you go a little more into that and just what you're saying to them and how they're doing so well with taking care of themselves and really relying on each other to do the right thing?
Yeah, it's a great point, Mike. And you know, I mean, you're in it every single day. I mean, this model, you know, is a little bit more difficult, right? So for the last month, you could use this analogy. We've been in the bubble, right? But when school starts, we're leaving the bubble and playing a season. Well, the NBA and MLS and the NHL, they're going in a bubble to play their season. That seems to be a lot easier. So there are difficulties as we get to the season in terms of how our players manage themselves in a very difficult environment, because there are many more people that are going to come to campus. There are travel situations that you have to deal with. So discipline, attention to detail, peer accountability, saying no to being in the environments that could put you in a compromising situation. All of those things require a commitment to wanting to play the season. So what we've said to our guys is, listen, winning a national championship is, as most have always said, is one on the field, but it's also going to be one off the field this year. And our guys have those traits necessary, and we've got a really good football team. So if we do the right things, we've got ourselves in a position to win a championship, and that's why they want to make sure that they can do this.
I'm wondering, Coach, we're talking to Brian Kelly, head coach at Notre Dame. The players are buying in and such, and all the other pro sports we're mentioning, they have unions to talk to leagues to deal with things. For the players, it's basically parents. How much interaction have you or the school had with parents who have had questions about the situation?
Well, I think that's a great point. I think what we said from the very beginning is that when we did our very first interaction with our procedures and protocols, and as you know, having a son at Notre Dame, the parents are not normally in the loop. It's Notre Dame's fashion of teaching and developing is that we generally deal with the students. But in this instance, and during a pandemic, we brought the parents in on all of the decisions that we were making relative to the health and safety of their students and their sons in this instance. So they were involved in all of our Zoom calls. They received all of the information relative to how we were going to treat their sons, how we were going to place the protocols out there to make sure that they were safe. We went through testing. And of course, you know, all of these things, you know, we've said many times before, you know, we were building the plane as we were flying it too. So there were things that we had to tweak as we went. And, you know, we were in contact with parents as we went through this entire process, and we didn't make it mandatory. If you didn't feel comfortable being here, you weren't going to lose your scholarship. You didn't have to sign a pledge. You didn't have to do any of those things that are being done at other schools. You had the ability to opt out, like many of the NFL and NHL teams and NBA teams have issued. So this has been definitely one where we've involved the parents in this decision.
And Coach, I'm curious, you mentioned building the plane as you're going along and trying to fly it in this instance. Part of that has been some of the differences in schedule. You guys are progressing towards putting pads on, getting ready to do football activities. And this year in college, you guys are going to get to do it with essentially OTAs, as it's been described, kind of the NFL model of that. So I'm curious, as you've started to look towards how do we translate the things that we're trying to do social distance-wise onto the field, has that changed the way you guys are looking to structure any of these OTAs, any of the practices coming up this fall?
Oh, yeah, it's a whole new world. You know, we have to have some kind of face coverings, right? You know, we're going to be testing, obviously, but we still have to have a face covering in terms of our teaching. So, you know, what does that look like? A cloth mask over your mouth is not going to translate very well in terms of communication. So, you know, custom-made plastic shields over your mouth, which sometimes are not the best, but require, you know, obviously from a ability for you to communicate with your players. There's going to be, you know, audio on the field where you're going to have to be mic'd so your voice can resonate and get out to the group. Those are going to be important teaching elements that, you know, we're going to have to walk through and make sure that our guys understand. So, you know, this is a whole new world in terms of teaching as well. So we'll take some time, because we do have some extra time built in, just to walk through those teaching opportunities that are going to be a little bit different than a traditional practice opportunity that we've had in the past.
Talking to Brian Kelly, head coach at Notre Dame. And at some point, Coach, it has to get to football. People are going to have to line up against one another and hit them and tackle them. So I'm sure you have a schedule which has to be written in pencil today. But is there a thought of a date when actual football will be practiced on the practice field?
Yeah, so our first practice opportunity is August the 7th. So, you know, we're essentially in our fourth fourth week of training. You know, we'll train up through the 7th, which will give us a good 6-7 weeks, and we'll still have the ability to train through the month of August. And let's say, for example, we do push our schedule back to late September. We're going to have plenty of time to work with our team. Again, remember now, we're making up for the fact that we have not had anybody tackled since our bowl game back in December. Wow. So with no spring ball, it's really going to be important that we get into some form of, you know, football-related activities. And so we're going to have to spend some time, you know, playing some football. I mean, it is a game that requires those kinds of skills. It's not just walkthroughs and, you know, watching video. So we've got some time, and that was why it was so important to kind of push this thing back to later in September to build in some time, almost, to be quite frank with you, to build in some teaching and some spring ball teaching and then segue into your camp, I think, is the best model that we've put together right now. And that's kind of the one that we're going to chase down here over the next 6 weeks.
And chasing it down, having that timeline is important. But, Coach, you mentioned spring ball. It's the question on everyone's mind. So I'm curious, have you guys planned for the possibility of a spring season?
Well, there's been discussions about it, certainly. Now, listen, I'm kind of the guy on the outside of the peripheral because we don't have a conference, but I've gotten a chance to listen to some of the conference calls in the ACC, and plans have been discussed. They make sense. They're rational, but they're difficult, really. I mean, because you're counting on some things that have to occur the right way. In other words, basketball has to start on time. You know, you've got to be able to, you know, ensure that, you know, some things happen for you in the NFL. There's just so many uncertainties when it comes to the spring. In a vacuum, is it doable? Absolutely. But the uncertainties that lie with a spring schedule, I think, push it back in the minds of many administrators because there are so many moving parts to it. I think that's why there's so much momentum to get to this opener and try to get to it with great discipline amongst each and every program, and then rely on each and every university to do a great job with their protocols. And if they can do that, hopefully we can get a season in.
Well, it sounds like you guys are well on your way, certainly, as it pertains to all this. So, Coach, best of luck. Please stay safe and healthy with everyone out there, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, guys. Good talking to you.
Golic
makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today. 5-time Olympic gold medalist Katie Ledecky joins us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And Katie, before we get going, my dad is such an Olympic nut. We're such a big swimming family around here, so we're really excited to talk to you. You did throw out a first pitch at Nats Park back in 2016, so I'm curious. Dr. Fauci is getting ready to throw it out tonight for the Nats and the New York Yankees opener here. Any advice for Dr. Fauci going into this?
Oh, I would never give advice to Dr. Fauci. I'm the one listening to him. You know, I'm so excited to watch that tonight. I'll be tuning in for sure. Love the Nats and love Dr. Fauci, so can't wait to see him get it over the plate tonight.
Yeah, that was after 2016 after the Olympics where he had 4 gold there. He had a gold in the 2012 Olympics. Your dominance, Katie, has been incredible. World record holder in the different 400, 800, 1500. But how has it been now? Because the one thing I do know about swimming is, man, the schedule you guys are on for what big meets to taper for, to be ready for, and you're supposed to be swimming the Olympics right now. So how much has this thrown off your training schedule, if at all, I guess?
Well, it threw it off at the beginning just a little bit, and we were still just kind of waiting to see what was going to happen. But once the decision was made and the postponement was announced, I was able to really shift my focus to 2021, and I'm still training hard and trying to use this extra year as a way to improve. And I spent a couple months training in a backyard pool, but I'm back in a 50-meter pool training really hard with some really motivated teammates, and I'm excited about the year ahead.
Well, that was the one thing we're going to ask. I mean, during the pandemic, you know, I know I was eating donuts. Everybody was watching Tiger King. You guys have to keep swimming somehow, some way. So I was just going to ask, how were you able to keep that going?
Yeah, as you know, staying in the water and keeping that feel for the water is super important. And I was very thankful that a very, very kind family had a really nice backyard pool in the area here near Stanford that I was able to train in with my teammate, Simone Manuel. It was a two-lane, 25-yard pool, so we were able to have our own lane and make sure we were still socially distancing and keep at our work and stay fit.
It's well, that worked out. I'm just saying, imagine being that person. Like, oh, by the way, I'll just have these Olympians come over and swim in my backyard pools. Katie Ledecky is with us here on Golic and Wingo. And so, Katie, how does this adjust your expectations for how the games are going to go overall? What have you heard as far as the powers that be in the the U.S. Olympics and everyone that's involved in decision-making for you guys? Have they given you a sense of what to expect now timeline-wise going forward?
I think we're starting to hear some things, see some things. Certainly there are always speculations and articles and things like that, but there's a lot we can't control, so I'm just controlling what I can control and focusing on my training right now, just getting a lot of really good work in. I'm getting eager to get back into some racing, but I don't know exactly when that'll be, so I'm just preparing for that first opportunity.
Katie Ledecky joining us, 5-time Olympic gold medalist, 15-time world champion gold medalist, here to talk about who she's partnering with. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But the one thing that, you know, Katie, your name comes up with maybe winning as over time over the next few Olympics as many medals or golds as Michael Phelps, and we saw his dominance. But your dominance, for those that don't know out there, you were beating people so badly you could almost get out and dry off before they were finishing. Now, one thing we do know, that things like that don't last forever. So as you're training and as you're swimming in more of these meets, do you start to feel the heat from some other swimmers from around the world that may be getting a little closer to you in some of your big events?
Yeah, there's great competition around the world, and there always is, and everyone's always getting faster. And so I'm just making sure that I'm also getting faster, and it's exciting and fun to have competition. And so I'm really motivated. As I said, I feel like I'm more motivated than ever and really trying to use this extra year for my benefit.
Well, you mentioned all of that. You know, one of the things you're here also is a benefit of a partnership you're involved in. What can you tell us about what you're doing with the folks at BIC?
Yeah, so I've partnered with BIC Soleil for their razors. And as you know, shaving is an important part of a swimmer's routine, and every choice that I make from here on out is important moving forward towards 2021. And I know that I can rely on the BIC Soleil Sensitive Advanced Razor for the best shave. And so I'm really excited about this campaign that we have. It's called Game On, and I'm partnering with BIC and alongside my teammate Simone Manuel, who I've been training with these past couple months. We're both working hard, and we're also trying to inspire women to have the confidence in themselves and not be afraid to really show it.
Simone Manuel, a great sprinter for the U.S. We're talking to Katie Ledecky, world record holder, 400, 800, 1,500-meter swim, world records, golds everywhere. I mean, the accomplishments have been incredible. But again, as you said, during the pandemic, you were able to find a pool to swim in. We're talking a lot about some of the other pro sports out here and when they're starting up and baseball starting tonight. When is, you know, people looking at swimming look to the Olympics or the World Championships, but you guys obviously have more meets than that. What is the schedule like as far as actual competitions coming up through this pandemic?
Yeah, there have been some competitions scheduled, and there are a lot of different things on the horizon that I'm looking forward to, and I'm still figuring out exactly which competitions I'll be going to, and, you know, I think everyone's figuring it out, and sometimes it might be a last-minute decision or a decision one way or the other. So I'm just taking it day by day. As we were talking about the Nationals, you know, they have the slogan of go 1-0 every day, and that's really what I'm trying to do, just take it day by day and attack the day.
Well, you've gone 1-0 multiple times, so that hasn't been a problem for you. I'm wondering, you just turned 23, certainly a lot of years in front of you. Do you have that long-range goal, not so much of medals or Olympics, but of how long that you want to do this?
I don't have an age in mind or a certain year. I think I know for sure I want to go at least through 2024 and kind of take it year by year from there. The Olympics in 2028 are in LA, so that's very enticing to try to stick around to then. But you know, I'll be 31 at that point. So who knows? Swimmers are staying in the sport longer these days, and I just want to see where I'm at in life at that point and go from there.
Katie, I'm curious, you spend usually as swimmers so much time in the pool. My younger sister was a collegiate swimmer and used to have so much practice, she hardly had time for much of a social life. In the middle there, obviously during this pandemic, you can train, but I'm sure a little bit less than usual. So you mentioned you've been with Simone a lot. What have you guys done to stay busy outside of the pool at this point since you've had plenty more free time, I'm sure?
I've actually been taking classes. So I'm still finishing up my degree at Stanford. I'll be finishing it up in the fall. I was able to take 4 classes in the spring, and I'm taking another 4 classes right now this summer. Stanford's on the quarter system, so I have a couple papers and midterms this week that I'm finishing up, and that's been great to have to really keep me busy during this time and do something really productive.
Well, we appreciate your time this morning and also your great partnership with Bic, you and Simone. Obviously enjoying that as well. And the more we have you swimming, the more we know we'll have someone from America on the top of the podium come World Championships and Olympics. So we look forward to more of that, Katie. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.